you know, people were always, you know, shouting and saying lovely things. I was dubbed as the pantyhoser.
What a name. Nice. Hello, welcome to Because Nerd. It is June 2020 as we record this. I'm your host, Chris Farrell. I'm joined today by one of my best and oldest friends, Mike.
Hey now.
And today we're also joined by a special guest, a very funny and talented veteran of movies, television, theater. We know her best for her roles in Black Christmas and Strange Brew, and she has a list of credits too long for me to read out at this time, though. Lynn Griffin, welcome to Because Nerd.
Well, thank you so much, Chris and Mike.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
You bet. I caught you already. You just said A.
Okay. Can I just start with a Toronto piece?
Yeah, please.
I'm from Northern Michigan. So it was about 1989. I did a trip to New York. And back then, New York wasn't quite so cleaned up. And I was in the subway system in New York. And like all the signs are like graffitied and broken. And it was hard to find your way around. Huh. Well, soon after that, I did a trip to Toronto. And then I got in the Toronto subway system. And I was like, this place is amazing. Like, it was so clean. The subway was clean. The signs were clean.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I need to move to Canada.
And you know what? We're still clean.
I think that Mike is just wishing he could leave the hellhole of the United States and actually escape.
Well, yeah, we have a lot of friends who want to be adopted by us right now.
Right. Yeah.
You could put me on that list.
Okay, good. I'll have to let you know when I've started the commune.
I clean up after myself. I'm very quiet.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I'll probably even do some chores or anything you need.
Oh, chores is good. Maybe we can have a farm in the country.
You met Chris at Pensacon.
Yes, correct.
So what do you think about when you meet those crazy fans like Chris?
Oh, it's great.
Just because I'm here, you can say whatever you want. It's fine.
It's really great. I am one of those people that will tell you, no, okay. I mean, come on, let's be honest. There have been some strange ones. Anyway, it was in New Jersey somewhere. Anyway, I had a stalker.
Oh, Lord.
Stalker. I mean, and he kept bringing me things to eat and drink, and people would go, don't eat that. Don't drink that. You might have spiked it. Everywhere I turned, this guy, like he was in the elevator. He was, everywhere I turned, this guy was there.
Oh.
And, man. Anyway, we finally had to call security. So, not everybody is like Chris. And Chris, now that I see you, when you, your name comes up on the screen, it just says because.
Oh, yeah, just because.
That's really funny, though, because now I will always call you because. And Mike, wearing your little hat and headphones and everything and your glasses, you look very intellectual.
Oh, wow. I do not get that one.
Smart and intellectual. Oh, my God. Pensacon was great, though. I had a great time there. I had one of the best breakfasts I've ever had in my life. And I met a lot of my favorite stars as well. I actually sat one night next to David Warner, and I didn't even realize it until I sort of said, I'm tired, and I kind of blew him off.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
But the guy, Paul McGann.
Oh, Paul. I love Paul. I'm a big Doctor Who fan.
I went up to Paul McGann, and I introduced myself, and he looked at me very strangely. And I said, no, I'm a big fan. I've watched with Paul and I, 50 times. And he looked at me and he said, what was your name again? And I said, Lynn Griffin. And he said, like Lynn, not Linda? And I said, yes, Lynn. And he said, oh, God, he said, because one of my very first girlfriends was named Linda Griffin. I thought he was being stalked. That's good. That's really good. Yeah. That's
funny.
But, I mean, you have to understand that even though we go hoping that, you know, fans will care enough to want to talk to us, but we're fans of the people that are there, too.
I was just going to say, like you said, all of us that are into this stuff are fans of all this stuff. So there's an appreciation for all these different things.
Like, oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Comic books, movies, you know, TV shows, yep. Actors, actresses, you know, I mean.
I mean, there are some extraordinary people there that you want to, that you wish you could. I always take time to sort of go and case the place and wander around and meet other people. Because there were like really like famous British actors there that I know from British theater were there. I thought it was pretty impressive. Anyway, little be known to me, I spent a lot of time in somebody's booth who then turned out that he thought he was positive for COVID.
Oh, wow.
So I obviously quarantined when I came back. But, you know, the thing is that now, I mean, it's so sad that we literally cannot do them anymore because there are thousands of people that you meet. And I just love shaking hands and taking pictures and giving hugs and stuff like that. I mean, I love getting to know the people, the fans. They're fantastic. You know, it's going to be a long time till we're allowed to do that again. And Pensacon, like, was right under the wire. I mean, I came back from Florida, and then like a week later, it was like the iron door came down and we were all shut in.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was 1 week after Pensacon, they closed everything down.
Yeah. So, you know, that might have been one of the last cons to happen, because after that, they were just shut down completely and still are.
So how are you faring with everything these days?
Well, you know, yeah, isn't it a funny time to chat? I mean, and I don't mean funny, ha-ha.
Right.
I mean, it's just surreal. It's truly surreal. And I can't believe that we just passed our, you know, the three-month
This has been a lot longer than 3 miles.
The three-month marker of being in isolation. And
right.
It was hard for us initially because we were 10 days away from opening a show.
Oh, geez.
Oh, man. What show was it going to be? What are you?
It was called The Slaughter Brothers Dime Circus. It's written by Sean Sullivan, the amazing Sean Sullivan, who you'll have to interview because he'll tell you about working on Wayne's World and Back to the Future 3.
I was drunk, Phil.
And what?
I was drunk Phil in Wayne's World.
Oh, he was drunk Phil in the back seat.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, hey, you know, a career is made by sitting in the back seat, being acting
awesome.
Drunk. And
I feel like I could pull off the drunk. I feel like I could pull off the drunk part. I'm not sure about
the
rest
Mike,
of
you
it,
have
though.
Been practicing for this role your entire
you know,
life, man.
It's got my name written all over it.
Exactly. Like, boy, was he lucky? And well, you'll talk to him, but he'll tell you about his audition with Mike Myers.
Yeah, we're gonna book. We're booking Sean for sure.
We were literally about to go into tech, and you know, it went as well as everything else. And of course, we went. Well, you know, we talked to the theater. They were really nice. They said we're gonna close it up, and then you know, in a few weeks, we'll just restart again. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
And we have no idea, because I think that live theater is going to be one of the last things that is going to be able to open up again.
Right. Yeah. It's a because that's about the worst environment you can try to bring everybody back into.
Well, yeah. I mean, unless you're going to just have 10 people in the audience.
that's what you should do. You should do really intimate, small.
Yeah.
You have to fill the empty seats with some cardboard cutouts just so it looks like you got some more going on.
I've got a few stuffed dummies of myself we could put in there. But at present, we're turning it into a radio play, but we'll see. I mean, it's a work in progress.
Well, We'll keep track of it for sure, and we'll put it out there when we see it coming.
Okay, it'll still be called the Slaughter Brothers Dime Circus.
Have either of you heard, there's an app out there called Vintage Radio, and basically it's a free app, but you could go back and listen to, you know, Invisible Man, Abbott and Costello.
Oh, really? War of the Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, War of the Worlds. There are all kinds of stuff on there, and sometimes I go back to listen to that.
Yeah.
But the app's really cool, though, if you dig that kind of stuff.
Oh, totally. I mean, I always say of myself, I was born a century too late.
Well, you probably definitely got to see some cool stuff over, I mean, you've had an incredibly long career with a lot of diversity.
Yes, I have. Name it. I've done it.
Right? Right?
How did you get started with everything? Because like Mike said, you've been doing this a while. So what kicked it off?
Well, my father was a fashion photographer, actually, like high fashion photographer. And when I was in diapers, doing, well, hardly high fashion in diapers, but high fashion for babies.
Yeah, I mean, that's relative, right?
I mean, my father used me a lot in his studio for advertising, and I actually was on the cover of my grade four speller, which was quite humiliating when everyone drew mustache and horns and everything, and I had to live with that for a year. So yes, way back when, and up until I was about 12, I guess, I was a baby model. And then I got a television show called Drop-In in Canada, and I did that for 5 years. And then I auditioned for a play, and I started doing plays.
Wow.
And then I started doing films. And then I went to theaters all across Canada and the U.S. And it just kept kind of growing and growing. And thankfully, I never had to get what they call a real job.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome. That's something to be proud of.
Living the dream. Yeah, that's good.
I guess, although, you know, my bank account has at some time shown how sad that was. Because in you know, this business, it's really either feast or famine.
Right.
Truly. I mean, yeah.
Any of those different mediums that you enjoy the most?
Well, I think live theater is wonderful. First of all, you are in control from the moment you arrive at the theater and the curtain goes up until the curtain comes down and you're in front of a live audience. So you're feeling immediate, hopefully, love and laughter and at least reaction to what you're doing. Whereas when you're in film and television, you very rarely are shooting in any kind of consecutive order as to the script. So you're shooting, you know, the ending before the beginning and the middle and the love scene before you've even met the guy. You know, that happens all the time. And I feel that film and television are really more of a director and an editor's medium because they get to choose your best take in the long run, which may not be the one that you felt was your best performance.
Yeah, right.
It's totally in their hands. Once you've, you know, wrapped up the shooting schedule, you wait and pray that you're even still in the film, which I've had happen where I've actually gone to the premiere and I wasn't in the film.
Oh, jeez. Whoa. And you don't even know it until you watch the movie?
No, I did not. I did not. And the funny thing was,
right,
my husband and I were sitting watching, and I was going, okay, like, you know how you go, okay, here's where I'm going to come in now. So I went, okay, it's coming. It's coming.
I think we blinked and missed it.
It's gone.
Oh my gosh.
Now, the very grateful thing was that when the DVD release came out, and it was a huge scene, which was just me and one other actor, and it was about 9 minutes long, and it was on the special features, the entire scene uncut.
You still get the paycheck though, right?
Yeah. And, you know, a great piece of tape. The film was called The Life and Times of Guy Tirifico. And it was about sort of a fallen music artist. And what I was playing was one of his groupies that they had come back to try and do a documentary about this particular artist, this particular singer, and I was one of the groupies. So I had a whole 9-minute speech about how I met him and how I went backstage and how I was hanging out with the Stones and, you know, that kind of thing. It was very cool. Anyway.
Oh, that's great. Kind of a failed musician myself, actually. I still play in bands, but.
Oh, that's cool.
Going back to that thing about playing theater, like I play in small clubs, right? Like not on any kind of a successful level, but yeah, even talking to my bands, we're like, geez, how does this go back into doing something like.
Well, I just don't know. I mean, they're talking about social distancing, but then that means, I mean, the theater we were about to open in only had 100 seats. So if you're going to seat people 6 feet apart, you're not going to have a very big audience. And the whole idea of doing independent gigs, right, is you make your money through ticket sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Talk about a labor of love.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. That ain't a lot of dough from the tickets.
And, you know, if you're hoping for a nice, big, hearty reaction to what you're doing, and there's 10 people going, what? You know, that's...
I've played a ton of those gigs. I've played all kinds of those gigs.
Oh, believe me. You know, we've done fringe shows like that. In fact, my husband does a solo show that I direct, and we did it in New York, and there was one performance, because at the fringe, you have all these weird times. You know, you maybe do it at 6 in the evening, but then your next show is either 11 in the morning or midnight. So we had a midnight show at this theater, and there were only 6 people in the audience, and every single one of them were critics.
Oh, geez.
Oh, Lord. That's talk about a tough crowd.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
Yeah, really. It was like doing a lecture, because it's a one-man right? show, too.
Oh, man.
Now, that was a project that your husband did, that Sean did?
Yeah, he does a solo show called Baby Red Boots Revenge.
Oh, very cool. We got to get him on here.
Come on. He's like Wayne's World, Back to the Future 3 gig. He's the main man. You know, yeah, we always say we should do some sort of show where we roll ourselves out in wheelchairs with, you know, our IV stands. And we go, oh, I was in Strange Brew and this is my husband. He was in Wayne's World. Hey, party on.
Yeah.
I would come watch that show in a heartbeat. Hell yeah.
That's a good segue to Strange Brew.
Oh,
any cool
it?
Stories on that, Bob and Doug?
I am the queen of segues. Can I tell you that?
Keep it rolling then.
Well, that was beautifully done. Yeah. So, I mean, when I was a kid, like Bob and Doug were enormously huge, you know? Do you have any cool stories? Any things that are like highlights to you on all that?
Well, I mean, try and picture this, that, okay, first of all, I get cast in the movie, which is fabulous, but I don't know if you were at the Q&A that we did in Pensacon, but Dave Thomas tells me that they had originally wanted Demi Moore to play the part.
Whoa.
And I'm like, what? After all these years, what?
Okay.
So evidently, I guess they got some kind of the rules from the CRTC or the Canadian Films that they had to use a Canadian. So lo and behold, out goes Demi and in comes Lynn. And evidently, she's never quite forgiven Dave for that. But, you know, the thing that's amazing about Strange Brew is imagine that you're playing opposite Bob and Doug McKenzie, but you're being directed by Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas.
Yeah.
So try and get your head around that, you know, that
okay,
the hardest thing
that
I
surreal.
Had to do was try and keep a straight face.
Right. I could imagine. Because
I was sort of, you know, I was the kind of heroine character. You know, I didn't tell the jokes. They did.
Take off, eh?
Except I think I did make up the line when we were in the big beer tank. Is it just me or is it getting warmer in here? I think I ad-libbed that.
That's
great. Hilarious shoot. And also, you know, at the time we shot it, they were very, very big. And, you know, keeping crowd control, because we shot a lot in Toronto. And So we had to keep the crowds back a bit. And, you know, people were always, you know, shouting and saying lovely things. I was dubbed as the pantyhoser.
What a name. Nice.
One of the more incredible things was when we filmed all the underwater sequence, we were at MGM Studios, you know, where they had this huge deal to make this movie. And we were on the lot and using the Esther Williams swim tank to do those scenes. And I got to go in, you know, into her palatial MGM dressing room, which still exists, which is just how you imagine it, with a lot of sort of gold and drapery and sort of, you know, very, very luxurious, with a beautiful vanity table and all that. But when we went to shoot it, of course, you know, I had my costume on that was, you know, kind of a nice big wool sweater, wool pants, boots, the whole thing, and you're, you know, you're going it. Now, of course, I've never scuba dived, but you have like a professional scuba diver with you that's going to buddy breathe with you. Oh. And he says to me, "Okay, so you know, when you need help, like we're going to get in the water, and you're going to, you know, you're going to go in, and I'm going to hold your legs underneath so that you are completely immersed. And if you need to breathe, you know, you just signal me, and we buddy breathe." But when he let me go, and I was supposed to swim to the surface, of course, between the wool sweater, wool pants, and boots, there was no way I was going anywhere. I was not gonna surface. So I was struggling. I'm struggling to try and get to the surface. And I'm, you know, finally monitoring at him, but I'm not doing the correct signal to get air. I'm panicking. I'm drowning.
Kind of like forgetting the safe word there.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, anyway, you know, and he finally kind of got, and I think in the movie, if I'm not mistaken, the shot that they finally used was a stunt woman doing it, because I couldn't do it. I couldn't get up to the surface. And I'm a strong swimmer too, but I couldn't do it. It was like hilarious. But then the whole idea too of the boys getting the air from the beer bottle in the car, like, is that not brilliant? Was that not a brilliant stroke of genius? Yeah. That there was air in the beer bottles? I mean, I don't know. Anyway, but they had stories about it being tricky. It's very tricky to be underwater and trying to enact a scene, knowing that at any point your scuba helper could be kind of looking elsewhere or not realizing that your signal is, you know, I'm not acting, I'm drowning.
Right, right.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, right. The whole time I'm thinking a wool sweater and boots, this doesn't sound very safe to me.
You know, I once had to supposedly fall out of a window. I had to commit suicide in a TV miniseries called I'll Take Manhattan. And we had like a structure in the studio that was a good probably 10 to 12 feet high and just like a sort of window ledge. And then on the floor, they just put like a mattress. A mattress and no stunt. And I wasn't allowed to jump. I was supposed to do one of those dead falls where you're standing and you just sort of fall forward like that. Anyway, I loved it. And after we did one take, I wanted to do it several times. It was fun.
Well, that's awesome. That's super cool.
Anyway, so, you know, we laugh because we go, in my career, I have died so many different ways. Like, I've been a victim so many different ways, like drowned, set on fire, shot in the head. Yeah, point blank, I was shot in the head in a movie called The Amateur. I did a movie just a couple of summers ago of a remake of Fahrenheit 451, and they set me on fire. I mean, I've died every way you can.
Yeah. Die hard my ass. You got to talk to Lynn.
That's right.
Come on, Bruce Willis. I'm die hard. Die hard and die hard again. Yeah. So, yeah. And so anyway, Strange Brew certainly changed my life, because then I moved to Los Angeles, and, you know, then I finally met my husband, Sean, and we lived in Los Angeles together 12 years, and then we moved back here. And we've been here now 24 years. Oh, my God. Wow. But, yeah, but we were like babies when we started. We were embryos. That's why we're still so young now.
That's right. And that's just a state of mind anyway.
Yeah. But I never imagined that I would ever move to LA, but on the strength of Strange Brew, I got a fabulous LA agent, and, you know, I worked a lot there and met Sean, and that was awesome.
That's great. Okay, I got to segue into another one, because this is...
Good. Time to segue.
So this might have happened in your Los Angeles years, but you did do an episode on Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
Kind of a friend of the show, Eddie McClintock. So the question that I'm getting to is just the experience of Warehouse 13 and if you got anything about Eddie.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Jesus, what did Eddie play?
That's hilarious.
I was sorry. I probably did an episode, and I think I was a psychiatrist.
That sounds about right.
Yes. You were? I saw your entire list on Wikipedia, so I don't imagine that you remember every single thing. Eddie was the lead role.
Oh,
he was the lead role agent.
Well, he was obviously in the scene. Sorry, Eddie. You know, it's not that I forgot you. It's that I, I'm getting kind of senile. The hair has gone gray. Eddie, the hair has gone gray. You got to forgive me. So many of these things you're on for like a day. It's like you do, like so many of these episodics, you do like a day or two and you're like a guest and you basically sort of get little rehearsal and you shoot your scene and it's like, love you, bye, and you never go back. And so,
yep.
But we always say when you do an episodic, sometimes you feel, you know, like the forgotten aunt, you know? Oh, did we invite her that Christmas? Yeah, I think we did. I don't remember. Was she vegetarian? I don't remember. Because, you know, you're there so briefly, and it's hard to make a huge impression, unless you totally can't remember your lines, and you're holding up the chute, and you're a total mess, screw up, which I try not to be on most occasions.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot and do a memory test, but I will tell you.
No, you don't. I don't feel put on the spot at all. No. Yeah, and if Eddie remembers me, then I will be totally shamed.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, now I have to go back and see if I can find it online somewhere and go, what was that? Because I did another series that had 13 in it where I played some kind of evil Irish nanny.
Oh, that one sounds fun.
But that wasn't Warehouse 13. That was a different one. But it was, again, maybe a Friday the 13th thing or something. I don't know. Like, as you say, too long in this business, can't remember everything anymore because she's getting older. But great memories of movies. I mean, certainly Strange Brew, Curtains, and Black Christmas. Look at that segue.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Anything on Black Christmas?
Oh, man. Black Christmas, was it the first film I did? It might very well have been, I mean, apart from like maybe small indie things.
Was it like 74?
I've had all my life to do. I love doing like indie projects, but Black Christmas was the first sort of big one. And of course I was being directed by Bob Clark. Bob, I called him Uncle Bob. He was just the very, very best director. He made such a wonderful atmosphere for all of us that when we were hanging out in that house in Rosedale, which still exists, which you can still go and visit. But we shot primarily in that house and in that attic. And we didn't, as far as I remember, we didn't shoot anything in studio. Everything was shot on location because even, you know,
awesome.
The University of Toronto was used for any of those scenes with Olivia and Kier. And they were a wonderful group of people. I mean, I go, come on, Margot Kidder, Andrea Martin, Olivia Hussey, Keir DeLay, I mean, I say Michael Rappaport, there's still other people that, you know, are dear to me that maybe aren't as well known. I mean, Marion Waldman, oh my God, she was great. I wanted to grow up to play that part. I think I would have been good as Mrs. Mack, although I think Andrea Martin got to play the role eventually in the remake, which I've never seen because they tell me they're all, I think there's now two remakes, but people tell me, no, they don't live up to the original. So anyway, that's nice. So yes, Black Christmas, it was kind of a party set. I mean, the fact that you're doing a movie that's really kind of gruesome, although, I mean, not as gruesome as the way horror films finally ended up with people being sawed in half and that, it was more of a psychological drama. But Bob Clark created a really loving atmosphere. And, you know, basically, for my scene, oh, well, let's talk about when I'm alive first before I'm dead. So when I was alive, first of all, when all the women are listening on the phone, we had no idea what we were hearing, right? Because we were just told to react that we were hearing an obscene phone call of some sort. But I mean, I don't know how old I was at the time, but to me, an obscene phone call was pretty tame in my mind, what it was compared to what it was in the film when I finally heard it. And I went, oh my God. And the fact, oh, Nick Mancuso and Bob Clark did the voices on the phone of Screaming Billy. My God. Anyway, it shocked me when I saw it. And also, until I started doing horror conventions, and I would do a lot of them with Art Hindle, who played my boyfriend, he had to remind me that in Black Christmas, it was my first screen kiss. That didn't go down very well with Art. Because I went, really? I don't remember. He went, why? You don't remember? How can you not remember your first screen kiss? Anyway, he's punished me a lot since then by bringing it up every time we do a convention that, you know, I didn't remember my first screen kiss.
Did you tell him, hey, you should have made it more memorable?
He certainly remembered it, so you must have made some kind of an impression.
Well, he was wearing that ridiculous big fur coat. I didn't even know who I was hugging. I could have been kissing a bear.
Oh, wow.
He evidently still has that coat. Needless to say. anyway, so going up to the attic, of course, you know, when we were shooting in the attic, and one of the main reasons that I think I was cast as Claire was that in the audition, I told them that I was a very good swimmer, so I could hold my breath for a long time. Because when we actually got upstairs and, you know, as they say, bagged me, you know, there were obviously technical difficulties because I really shouldn't breathe, which was fine. We were cool with that. But if I did and they had sort of poked some nose holes and maybe it was a little bit of a mouth hole because it was sucked into my mouth. But if I breathed at all, but even if I didn't breathe, you could see condensation forming on the bag. So we decided that what we would do is just literally have me hold my breath and keep my eyes open and deadly still. Mm-hmm. While, you know, Bob is sitting right opposite me. Bob was brilliant while we did this scene because he was sitting right opposite me and he had his foot on the rocker of the rocking chair.
Yep.
And Bob was the one rocking it while I was trying to maintain the death pose, the death stare. And Bob was also the one who, the very fancy, beautiful cat, was a real diva and didn't want to perform particularly. So Bob would be trying to like hurl Claude onto me so that Claude would like climb onto my lap and they wanted him to lick my face. Well, Claude, oh, you know, no way, man. I'm a beautiful Persian cat. I'm not doing that. So they finally decided they had to spray my face with catnip. I mean, spray the bag, not my actual face, but spray the bag. So Bob hurls Claude at me. Claude kind of gets on, sort of makes contact via his claws on my knees and starts scrambling up my legs with his claws out. Well, I'm trying to play dead, of course, right? And there's Claude going like this. Anyway, we finally got the shot, but holy God.
Oh, man.
Anyway, and of course, you know, they had me, me all suited up, and Bob used to love every day, because it actually took several days to shoot it. But Bob used to love when, you know, they'd get to lunch and he'd say, okay, it's lunch, everybody, but not you, Lynn. You have to stay because we don't want to have to rejig you. So that would be the joke of the day, that Lynn has to remain up in the attic while everybody else goes and has a lovely catered lunch. Oh, my God. There's lots of stories from Black Christmas. My God. Yeah. Now, have you ever seen Curtains? Did we talk about Curtains?
We did not.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay. Okay. There's so your homework is to get a movie called Curtains. Its initial run, it didn't do well at all. But then when it was re-released, it really got a following.
Very
so
cool.
Curtains is about six actresses who are up for the same part in a big movie, and one of them will kill to get the part, literally.
Oh, okay.
Very yeah. good. Actually, I got a little list to follow up here already. I have maybe Red Boots Revenge to check out. I need to get back to Black Christmas. And then I just wrote on Curtains. I have to go back and ask you, the project that you had getting started that you and your husband were doing, that you were just about to do in the theater that got postponed.
Oh, it was called Slaughter Brothers Dime Circus.
That's it.
So, Lynn, you had told me at the con that you had two jokes that you wouldn't tell me until we were on the podcast. So I've been dying to know what these are.
Okay, so what do the Starship Enterprise and toilet paper have in common?
Oh, they boldly go where no one has gone before.
That's good. But,
okay.
So, but maybe I'm sorry to hear that, Chris, if that's true for you. But the answer is, okay, what do the Starship Enterprise and toilet paper have in common? They both circle Uranus searching for Klingons.
Ba-dum-bum.
My other joke is pretty clean, but because it was told to me by a six-year-old boy.
Okay.
And the joke was, why do women wear makeup and perfume?
Got me on that one.
What is it?
Because they're ugly and they stink.
Whoa. A six-year-old misogynist?
Old, yeah. Yeah.
The kid needs to learn some manners.
That was the beginning of the Me Too movement for me.
Did you set that kid straight after that?
Oh, yeah. I pushed him out of the tree he was hanging from. you've made me very happy today. Thank you. Right? You know,
that's fantastic.
Sometimes I kind of go, oh, how am I going to talk about anything right now? Because everything is sort of, you know, on hold and weird. But you've made me very happy and you made me laugh a lot. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, well, that feeling's very mutual. Thank you. This has been a great conversation.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, God knows we need the arts, right? We need movies, we need television, we need radio, we need the theater. These are the way that this is how we keep people sane. This is how we give people entertainment that takes them away from the worries of the world.
Could not agree more.
Very well spoken.
The other thing that I say to you all in the United States of America is, in November, go out and vote. Please vote.
There's a lot of inspiration this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's so funny because after telling you my silly, dirty jokes, I felt that we had to introduce some meaningful and thoughtful conversation so that they knew we weren't just like silly, frivolous people who didn't care. Ha ha.
If those jokes were too dirty for you, I'm kind of scared if you went back and listened to our episodes.
yeah. Be warned.
Okay. Well, that's now you've laid down the gauntlet. Now I have to listen. Now I have to listen to them. Maybe I should have listened to them before so I could have prepped with more dirty jokes.
Well, I can tell you my favorite part of this interview is I get to tell my wife that you said I looked intelligent.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, okay, and feel free to call again, and next time we'll put Sean in the hot seat.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
That sounds great.
You just let us know, set a date.
Yeah.
We got nowhere to be, nowhere to go, no one else to talk to. But at least we're still smiling. Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. It was awesome talking to you.
You too. You bet. Take care. And take off, eh?
Yay! Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Because Nerd. If you liked it, make sure to subscribe, share, rate, or comment. And check out becausenerd.com for even more cool shit. And if the spirit has truly moved you, you can pledge your support directly to us on Patreon. Because Nerd is a production of Scriptic Media.